This is the StoryCorps podcast.
A lot of the older guys didn't think I should be there, and I was taking a job from a man.
He interviewed me for 15 minutes, and then he said, "You need to stand up and turn around.
I want you to know that if you need me to hold your hand, I'm there."
Today, we take you to work with three stories from women doing what they love. As you'll hear, it's not always easy, but these ladies work it anyway. First, we hear from Barbara Moore. Her daughter, Olivia Feit, interviewed her in Baltimore, where Barbara has been a bricklayer since 1973. She's recently retired, but during more than 40 years on the job, she laid the masonry for many Baltimore landmarks, including Camden Yards, where the Orioles play. Barbara started back when she was 21, and she was the only woman in Baltimore doing the job. With a tiny 115-pound frame, she was also one of the smallest.
Right out of high school, I worked in an office, but a couple hours behind a desk and I was falling asleep. So I became a bricklayer.
Well, I specifically remember getting bullied at school and telling boys that were bullying me, "You better watch out. My mom is a bricklayer and she'll come beat you up if you mess with me."
Well, it was kind of rough at first because, you know, a lot of the older guys didn't think I should be there and I was taking a job from a man, but I believed that I could do that job. And I was working with this guy, Tony Anello, who was a World War II vet, and he had a plate in his head. And he was, you know, really an old school guy, but he was willing to work with me when a lot of other people did not want me as their partner. And when he passed away, his daughter called me and said that he wanted to leave me his tools. So that, I think that's probably, if you're getting tools from the bricklayers that have gone before you, that would be a sign of respect.
I can't even really remember a time that you came home and you said, "Oh, I'm going to quit," or "This is too hard." And I, at a very young age, learned how to massage your calloused hands. And then a little later on in life, sometimes I would paint your fingernails.
Not that a manicure lasted very long.
I noticed that throughout my life, people always come up to me on the street and say, "Are you Barbara Moore's daughter?" There's a lot of people in this town that have a great respect for you, and you've earned that.
Well, you're very kind.
Well, how would you like to be remembered?
The only thing that's important to me, my dear, is that you remember me.
But you've had your hands in so many things that will last for so much longer than either one of us.
I know. I don't care about that. Whatever I did, it was always something that I wanted to do for you.
Barbara Moore with her daughter Olivia in Baltimore. You can see photos of Barbara's incredibly buff biceps on our website, storycorps.org. Next, one woman's journey to the top of the corporate ladder. Tia Smallwood attended Douglas College at Rutgers in the 1960s, back when her name was Tia Casiato. It was a very different time. She was an economics major and often one of the only female students in her classes. Here, she speaks with her daughter, Christine.
All the girls I went to high school with would talk about being teachers. And when I went to college, I started to study things that I really loved, and that's when I started taking finance and accounting courses. And this miserable old man, I had him for second year accounting and business law. He said to me, "Miss Casiato, you are the only woman that has ever gotten this far in my class. And I will make sure every day is a living hell for you." And he used to grade us on our class participation and how we would answer questions. And he said to me at the beginning of every class, "I hope you're prepared, Miss Casiato, because the most difficult question of the period will be yours." And I would smile. I mean, this is how backward the world was.
So then you graduated from Douglas, and how many job interviews did you have to go on?
I think I wrote 80 letters. I don't know how many jobs I applied to. And when I went in for the first interview, and this is like a vivid memory, I owned one dress. It was shades of red and pink in these big block geometric squares that had short sleeves, and it was a mini dress, and I had tights and heels on. And I walked in, and this guy, he interviewed me for 15 minutes, and then he said, "You need to stand up and turn around." And I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "Stand up and turn around." And I stood up and I leaned over his desk and I said, I don't need this job this much. And that's when he said, you're hired. That's the way it was. And I think it's like that today, only it's much more subtle.
How hard was it then to work and take care of Stephen and then me later on?
I really had this idea that I could do everything 100%. You know, like you can be 100% worker, 100% mother, 100% wife, and you can't. It's impossible. And you have these terrible decisions to make. Do you stay home? Do you work? Do you go after the brass ring in your career? What do you do with your children? You unconditionally love them. And you would give anything for them. You would give up your life, your career, your home. It's complicated. It's complicated.
Tia Smallwood with her daughter Christine. After her story aired, Tia's old friends and colleagues started to reach out. She sent us a note that said, I started receiving emails and phone calls from high school friends, colleagues from the 1970s and 1980s, and current friends and coworkers, all with their own recollections of similar events. I'm struck by how frequently this kind of thing happened to so many of my peers. For our last story, we're going underground. If you've been to New York City, you've probably been on the subway at least once. And maybe, just maybe, you heard this first voice over the loudspeaker.
Hi, my name is Paquita Williams.
My name's Laura Lane. I met Paquita on the subway when we got stopped underground for 2 hours.
Paquita Williams is a subway conductor. In September 2013, Laura was on Paquita's train when they got stuck in a tunnel. The way Paquita handled the situation made such an impression on Laura that she wanted to learn more about her.
Are most people nice?
For the most part, yes. For the most part. There's times if the train breaks down, people think that's my fault. Or if there's an increase in the fare, that's because I said, hey, let's increase the fare. But I think back on my mom. I have 3 sisters and 4 brothers, and she had to be patient with all of us. So that's why I'm able to be patient. Like the day the train stopped on us.
Yeah, it was like 8 a.m. I was on my way to work.
There was no power. So I walked through the whole train. I walked from front to back because I knew somebody would be nervous. And passengers were saying to me, it's Friday the 13th. I said, well, we're alive. Somebody didn't wake up on Friday the 13th and would have loved to have been on this train. So it's a good day for us.
You really made everybody on that train connect. We all started talking with each other like human beings. And we left the train and somebody was like, let's do this again tomorrow morning, same place, same time. What could have started out as a bad day turned into a good day because of you.
About 20 years ago, I went to the dentist and I was so afraid. And I said to the dentist, please hold my hand. Just let me know you're there. And he said to me, I'm not your date. And that stuck with me. So that's why I do what I do with my passengers. I want you to know that if you need me to hold your hand, I'm there.
New York City subway conductor Paquita Williams with one of her passengers, Laura Lane. So, you know how people say that we make you cry on the radio? Well, we also want to make you laugh. We're on a hunt to find the country's biggest characters, and we're trying something different. We're asking you. So tell us about larger-than-life personalities, you know, people who make you laugh no matter what they say, who speak from heart to mouth without a filter. Know someone? Write to characters@storycorps.org. For the podcast, I'm Nadia Raymond. Hasta luego.
All StoryCorps interviews are archived at the American Folklife Center at the Library of Congress, and you can hear StoryCorps each Friday on NPR's Morning Edition. Major support for StoryCorps comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and through donations from listeners like you. Help keep us going. Become a StoryCorps member today. Find out how and learn about member benefits at StoryCorps.org.